Hello, TSF family. We wanted to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for your hard work to love yourself more and for your feedback.
Can you believe it's been 3 years that we've been doing this spiritual fix, and it has been such a beautiful labor of love for Anna and me.
We have loved doing this work. We've loved hearing from you, and we love exploring ourselves and each other alongside our listeners.
We wanted to put out the call for 3 ways that you can help support us to support you.
One, we would love you to leave us a review on iTunes or follow us on Spotify.
2, drop us an email and let us know how much the podcast means to you.
And 3, you can donate monthly or even just once to our PayPal patronage.
Every little bit helps, and we are so grateful to those of you who have donated already. Thank you.
You help make this podcast possible.
Thanks, y'all.
You can go to our website, www.thisspiritualfix.com, for information on how to pledge as well as to email us.
Hello, TSF family, and welcome to episode 12 of season 7 of This Spiritual Fix. Today we are going to be talking about the obedient critic and the vengeful martyr and how we can reflect on how they've been showing up in our lives.
Hypnosis. Mindfulness. Meditation. Past life regression.
This spiritual fix. Two mystical mamas hacking the self-help game.
With Anna Stromquist
and Christina Wiltsey.
Hello, Christina.
Hello, Anna.
How have you been?
I am doing well. How are you?
Good. I'm excited for this episode because I feel like after I've listened to all the episodes and edited them and digested the material, I feel like I'm ready to kind of talk more about these villains and do a recap today, because it's so complicated. It would be like trying to explain the 12 different signs in astrology to someone who never heard them before. Like, it takes a lot to learn.
It does.
So, like, when I was first learning about astrology, I needed a mnemonic device in order to remember, you know, like, my very educated mother, like, Mars, Venus, Mercury, like, all those. Did you know that in school?
I didn't.
Oh, my very educated mother just served us 9 pizza pies. So that was how I learned the planets. Mars, Venus, Mercury.
So you go through all of them.
Yeah.
Now there's no pizza pies. There's just pizza.
Well, it was Pluto, but there's no
pies.
So it's
now.
My very educated mother just served us.
Nine. Just served us.
Just served us noodles.
Don't you think? I think it's so strange too. Like the representation of the fact that Pluto. I get that Pluto wasn't even discovered until whatever. You know, wasn't even discovered till later. So the fact that they, I don't actually understand. Who named Pluto Pluto?
Tomba.
What?
His last name was Tomba, I think.
Okay, so
I only know that because he's from my state. Very few New Mexicans are famous.
But the idea being the fact that I was like, oh my God, like I can't believe that they named a planet Pluto after the underworld. Huh. But if it was someone in modern day times who named it Pluto, then I'm not fussed. I'm not fussed.
Yeah,
at all.
he was born in 1906 and died in 1997.
Right. So tell me about your fitness stuff before we get into
it. Yeah. Okay. So a long time ago, we had an episode about fitness and I was talking about revamping my whole fitness journey. And now I'm like, it has been officially 12 weeks since I started taking creatine, which I don't know when I started taking my fitness more seriously, but I started taking the creatine 12 weeks ago. And oh my gosh, I started to see major results from that, like just muscle strength and better tolerance to exercise and quicker recovery. So that's been great. And then what I did is I joined the dorky bandwagon and I got a weighted vest.
Did you send me that Instagram where it's like women in their 40s and it's like, it is time.
Yeah.
It's like, da,
yeah. It's like, it's like the music of when the guy pulls the sword out of the stone in King Arthur.
Or like in The Lion King. It's from
Lion King.
Yeah, it's from The Lion King. Of like representative of when Simba finally goes up on Pride Rock and becomes the king.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought it was about the sword and the stone. Duh. Well, anyways, I've been wearing the weighted vest and like adding that to my routine. And it's just going really well. Like, I'm feeling really good. And my husband bought a bar hang, and we've been practicing bar hangs together. So what's really cute is that like him and I have totally different work life schedules, and he's a night person, I'm a morning person, and like we just, we're like two ships in the night, if that makes sense, in a lot of ways. And so what we do together is like, we've been doing a 6-minute circuit almost every day where we do 30 seconds of six different exercises twice. So it turns out being only 6 minutes, and I have an interval thing, and every 30 seconds we rotate like doing different things together.
That's so cool.
And it's so dorky, but we're doing wall hangs, and they say that like if you can do a 20 second wall hang, that's really good, and then you want to build to 30 seconds, and once you do that you can start working on chin-ups. So I just hit 30 seconds yesterday.
That's
so
congratulations.
It's just a little bit every day getting stronger, and it's been really fun and worthwhile, and it just makes me happy, and it makes me so much more confident to seize the day. Like when I look at my schedule and everything I have to accomplish that day, I just feel like, yeah, I can do this because my body is strong and healthy and can tackle it.
That's amazing. I'm just still working on chaturanga. I literally can't even like chaturanga with my, you know what chaturanga
is?
Yeah. Like
that. But you're so strong. I feel like when we go on walks and stuff, you're stronger than me.
I have very good endurance. But I don't have a lot of upper body strength.
Maybe because you're tall. It's just like your limbs are longer. There's like a more...
There's the biophysics is a little challenging.
Yeah.
Let's
I'm
just
short.
Say that.
Just so you know, I'm
weak.
Short. Christina's tall. Yeah. It's probably a lot easier to do certain things when you're short versus tall and vice versa. But
Right. So you want to get into it with the villains.
Okay. Yes. All right. So going back to what I said about coming up with the mnemonic device... I was like, these villains are really important, and I can't seem to remember all their names or the order, and it's just, like, really confusing. Like, my friend and I were hanging out together, and I was trying to... I had her do your villain quiz online. She kept asking me all these questions. I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember. I can't remember it all. It's like, there's just so much.
Who was she?
So, she got the answer that she was Peter Pan.
She was the Eternal Child.
Which was really weird to me, because she's like... a very capable mother and CEO, and she created a company that has 120 something employees. Like, she's like a badass.
Yeah.
But she got, when she took the quiz, she got Peter Pan.
So there'd be two things to look at. One would be her Enneagram to see what she naturally tends to.
Okay.
Because it could be that when she took it, she was in a really relaxed state, and so therefore, like, it took a different thing. Or you could look at her human design and see if her G-center is defined or undefined. Because somebody can be, like, ambitious and get a lot of things done and still... And sometimes even be able to, like, create whole things because they've moved through their arc. Does that make sense? It's like they're not the villain... They've actually moved through their arc. They, like, overcome the natural tendency that they had to be that thing. So they showed up as that.
Oh, that might be it. Because yeah. She's very advanced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Well, anyways, so I came up with a mnemonic device for anyone listening. Because I feel like let me first start with the astrology one. So I wanted to learn all the astrology signs in order. So it was, this is so silly. Aries told Jem, can Leo visit Libra? So sad, Kate ate people. So stupid. Stupid mnemonic device, but it worked. So it got me all of them in order.
All right, so say it again.
Aries told Gem. That's Aries, Taurus, Gemini.
Yeah.
Can Leo visit?
Yep.
Which is Cancer, Leo, Virgo.
Yep.
Libra.
Yep.
So sad, which is Scorpio, Sagittarius. Because I needed the S's to be like I couldn't too... I needed the so for Scorpio and the sad for Sagittarius, okay. Right? I didn't want two S's in a row and then not remember who came first.
Yep.
So sad. And then Kate with a C, Capricorn.
Yep.
Eight people, Aquarius, Pisces.
Okay.
That's how I memorized it.
That's really
And sometimes
cute.
Someone tells me their birthday and I actually go in my head and I'm like told, or, you know. Like
that is adorable. I love
how
that.
How did you remember them in order?
I just see them. I don't always remember them, but I've talked to you enough about it, and I've like talked, and it's kind of like a thing with my work where naturally I kind of need to know people's signs naturally, or kind of have, you know, I learned a lot from learning you, so I just kind of like vaguely remember where they are in the year, and I have a person that I associate, and I remember their birthday, and I know what they are.
All right.
Very manual.
So just like it took a long time to learn all the different signs, like all the 12 different personalities. We're lucky here because there's only 9 things, right? Mm-hmm. So I told myself, okay, it can't be that hard to learn because there's only 9. Astrology is 12. So anyways, this is the mnemonic to remember them in order, okay?
Okay.
Only vengeful, vain, eternal elves dance happily, ruining Iceland. Because I remember how in Iceland there was this whole, like, issue with, there was like an elf mountain, and every time they were trying to construct a highway through or around this elven mountain, like the next day they'd come and their tractor wasn't working, and this, like, all these, there was all these calamities associated with trying to construct this highway, so they decided to go completely around the mountain, and they believed that it was elves doing it.
Yes,
which I love, which makes me want to go to Iceland. So anyways, only vengeful, vain, eternal elves dance happily, ruining Iceland.
That's amazing. Obedient critic, vengeful martyr, vain controller, eternal child, evasive expert, divisive immortal, hungry shapeshifter, righteous bully, and invisible destroyer.
Yes. Okay, so we've got those. And then how to remember, like, the personalities associated with them. So you were telling me that we start at the first chakra.
Yep.
And we move our way up. So it's, hold on.
And it's confusing because I kind of abandoned the chakra system, I should say that. Human design is more, it's kind of a little bit all over the place, so that's not very helpful.
This is the human design chakra stuff. But anyways, so if I'm touching my, okay, I start here at the bottom.
Yeah.
I'm touching my pelvis area. Only is obedient critic. And I go up. Vengeful is vengeful martyr, which is the second chakra.
Yep.
Vain controller.
Mm-hmm.
Eternal child.
Mm-hmm.
Elves is
evasive expert.
Evasive expert.
And rejection, which is in the heart.
Okay. D is
divisive immortal, which sits as injustice, which is kind of basically in the throat, the throat chakra.
Okay. H is hungry shapeshifter,
which is in the third eye.
Righteous bully is the ruining Iceland R. Mm-hmm.
Right, which is basically the crown-ish, right? It's like depending on the system, you have nine chakras, and that ninth chakra is all the way up above it's in the place above the head, which is where the invisible destroyer is.
Okay, and the visible destroyer is the last one. Okay, yep. So, okay, the first one is obedient critic, and that's the humiliation wound.
Yep.
So we know that it's the humiliation wound because it uses humiliation to make other people feel bad.
Yeah, it's the most base kind of, it's the most base wound, and it's like it goes to your legacy. It's all about, the obedient critic is all about following the rules and how you actually handle the legacy of, like, status and what you've inherited and, like, where's your place in the hierarchy and did your family do this and do you have enough credentials to be able to do this? That's the obedient critic, and it sits in humiliation because if you don't have the credentials, like, shame is used in a lot of families and a lot of cultures, shame is used
to control the child.
To control the child to be able to be, so that they achieve a lot and have a lot of success in terms of credentials.
I remember, tell them what you told me about England and the manners versus the U.S.
Oh, right. About how in England, the humor is based on, in America, the humor is based on being dumb. Being dumb is the worst thing that you can be. Mm-hmm. So all our humor is like dumb blonde jokes and things like that. And in England, it's all about being rude, right? So it's much more of a different, it's a very different feel. I would say it's more of an obedient critic humor in which you're kind of trying to be clever and be intellectually superior to other people because being rude is considered the worst thing possible.
Mm-hmm.
So all their humor is based on jokes about people being rude.
Okay, total side note, I've been reading all of these Anthony Horowitz mysteries, the Magpie Murders. Do you know about this?
I don't.
It's Magpie Murders, Moonflower Murders, and the Marble Hall Murders. And it's very good. It's a story within a story, and it's kind of Poirot, cozy murder kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love that.
But anyways, in one part, speaking of the British thing, they're talking about how it's like the 1840s, the story within the story, and televisions were just invented, and this Grand Duke is like, we will not have a television in our house because I believe in culture and not in entertainment. And it totally, like, hit me. This is totally unrelated to all the villains, but it was like, whoa, there's a difference between culture and entertainment. And we are, like, an entertainment-heavy society right now. But, like, think about it. There is a big difference between reading Dickens or, like, playing violin or just, like, culture versus entertainment. Like, let me get on my stupid video game. Let me just watch YouTube. Like, we have replaced culture with entertainment. And it just kind of...
And I would say that the difference, if I had to say there was a difference, culture communicates in multiple dimensions. It communicates emotionally, intellectually, spiritually. It like hits you in multiple places. Entertainment usually only hits you mentally, maybe emotionally a little bit, but it doesn't go to those other places. It doesn't hit you in other places. Mm-hmm. And doesn't, and like, AI, it doesn't have the ability to change you. Because culture, if you think of culture, it's like you grow as a result of having exposure to it.
And AI, I don't think can ever generate culture. Whereas I feel like it can generate entertainment.
Exactly. It can generate entertainment, but not culture. But we have been spoon-fed entertainment for so long and have lost the understanding of culture.
That... And that's why I think, like, you know, giving the kid the iPad and all that is so dangerous now. I'm realizing it, because you're just teaching them entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, that's a whole can of worms.
Yeah, my son has been writing a script. He's written 10 scenes of the script. It's like a horror game. He's like really into horror games. He's right. 8. So he's like really into entertainment. I wonder what horror
means to him. I'm very curious.
He's like, no, he knows what it is. Like, he knows. It's very interesting how he kind of got into that, like, space. Like
ghost horror? Blood
no,
horror?
No, like kind of, it's a movie called Five Nights at Freddy's. It's about these like animatronics that are haunted.
Five Nights at Freddy's?
Five Nights at Freddy's, the movie, and he's doing like a fanfic spinoff movie based on it. And he's like written the script. He's doing all the sets and the costumes, and he's going to film it. We're going to film it in the next couple of weeks. But it's interesting, because I said to him,
he wrote the dialogue too?
Yeah, he wrote all the dialogue. It just came out of him, like, he like knew exactly what it was going to say. It was crazy. It was weird. It was like really strange to see.
You got to send me the video.
I will. But the thing that I thought was interesting was that I asked him, I was like, what is the greater thing that this is going to convey? And he's like, nothing. It's just, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, I've been really trying to be like conveying something below. And like, even if you aren't aware of it, it's good to try and at least try and do something.
Yeah, have a message.
Have some sort of holographic meaning to whatever it is that you're doing. Of course, it's the first one. He's 8 years old. We're going to give him a pass.
I mean, come on. Come on. I think you're going to give him a mother wound. Come on.
Get this play in order. I need to have a spiritual meaning, this horror film that you're doing.
Tisk, tisk.
So disappointed in you, son.
All right. Oh my God. Okay. All right. Sorry. That was like a whole tangent. Oh, we're talking about humiliation and the obedient critic. Okay.
Yeah.
So obedient critic is all about using humiliation to hurt others when they are in their best form. What do they look like?
They are the equalizer, which means that they are someone who is actually removing obstacles, not creating them.
Okay. All right. Okay, number 2 is the vengeful martyr.
Yep.
So only vengeful.
Yes, vengeful, vain, evil elves. Abandonment wound. Abandonment wound.
Oh, I forgot to say evil when I gave the mnemonic. It's only vengeful, vain, evil elves. I didn't say evil when I did it.
There you go.
Oh, I think it's eternal elves, not evil elves.
It used to be evil elves, and you changed it to eternal elves.
I changed it to eternal elves. You know why? Because I needed to designate
which. You would have thought that elf would have been evasive and not evil. Yep, that makes sense. All right, so obedient. Oh, so vengeful martyr is abandonment. It's the 2 in the Enneagram, and it's the sacral center in human design. It's also the sacral chakra.
Okay, so the abandonment wound is the vengeful martyr, and they use...
They're all about... They fluctuate between scarcity and abundance.
Oh, scarcity and abundance. That makes sense.
Yep.
Oh, yes. I totally relate to that. And then when they're in their best state, they are the...
They are the nourisher. They're in full abundance.
Okay, love it.
Yep.
Okay, the vain controller. So only vengeful, vain elves. We've got the eternal elves. We've got vain controller. Their wound is betrayal. That's easy to remember because control has to do with betrayal. So vain controller is betrayal.
Exactly.
And martyrdom is everything to do with abandonment. So that makes sense. And criticizing the obedient critic has to do with humiliating others. So that also makes sense.
Yep.
Okay, these are all easier to understand now. Okay.
Yep.
So tell me, the vain controller there, basically?
The vain controller moves from control to trust. That's what they fluctuate between.
Okay, when they're in best state?
In their best state, they are, the legend of that is the inventor. Right?
Why?
So imagine the inventor, because of the fact that this one is all about resources, material resources. Okay, and so a vain controller is going to be trying to manipulate material resources to their like, and they're denying other people resources, like popularity or influence or any of these kind of invisible things and these invisible resources. Oftentimes it's money as well. So when people have issues with money, there's a lot of the time that they're sitting in this one. So control is the worst part. And then trust, in the trust part, you're able to invent stuff because you have all the resources available and you trust that the things that are going to come to you that you need, that you need it to. Everybody who's in the betrayal wound has to work on trust.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have E for eternal child, the only vengeful vain eternal elves. There's yep. the eternal.
Yep.
Eternal child is mother wound, which is going to be the easy to remember because eternal child has to do with mother. So it's the mother wound.
Yep.
Okay.
It's the four in the Enneagram. It's the G center in human design. And it's the chakra that sits between the solar plexus and the heart.
And these are people who fluctuate between what?
Between highly internalized worlds, isolated internalized worlds, to being able to be externalized and being they're effectively, when I say it's all about growth.
And these are the Peter Pans.
It's all about growth. So when they're in their worst place, they are willing to isolate and capture others so that they are basically completely monopolizing someone's attention and time. Right? That's their worst form.
Okay.
Peter Pan stole Wendy and John and Michael.
Right.
From England, brought them to Neverland, and basically hoped that they would never remember London again.
Okay.
And always got mad at whenever they do that. That's the worst form. It's a highly internalized, they're inside their egg, they never want to leave, and they want to try and grab all of the people around them, all the mothers around them for love. You go to the other side of this, and you get the traveler. The traveler has mastered their fear of the world. They're taking care of themselves and they are learning.
They've cut the roots with their mother, kind of.
Exactly. It's more like, and they're able to be growing in the external world, not just kind of growing internally. Okay. Neverland is an internal space.
Okay. All right. Evasive expert. So that's the elves in the little mnemonic. And that is the rejection wound. But I'm confused because when I see the word expert, evasive expert, I think of injustice, because everybody I know who has an injustice wound claims to think that they're the expert. They're the expert on politics or the expert on ecology. Like, I don't know. Every injustice person I know seems to be the expert. So why is that rejection and not injustice?
Because what I find is that the evasive part is more representative of the rejection
fugitive.
Wound.
Yeah, the fugitive.
The fugitive is the rejection wound's mask, and the evasive part is really important. This is so the expert part comes from the solar plexus connection, which is, again, this is why it doesn't totally match up with the chakras in human design. The solar plexus people are very bad at understanding their own feelings. They're always getting their own feelings mixed up with other people's feelings. So they have a tendency to intellectualize everything because emotions are so complex. They're the true empaths.
Are you saying that they're an expert in being evasive, or are you saying that they're just experts in general?
They are usually experts in general. They are the type of people who are going to do deep research, who are going to be incredibly intellectual, and who are going to completely detach from emotional connection in their worst form.
Okay.
Because
you're a rejection wound and person primary, and you're an expert on a lot of things. So you always want to have someone with a rejection wound in your trivia night group.
You absolutely do. That's a really good one.
Okay.
So yeah, it's the, like I said, it's the solar plexus in human design, and it's the five in the Enneagram. And my husband is originally a five. His very good friend was also a five. And both of them had difficulties with emotions. And so they just researched and thought about things endlessly.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. They are also evasive in the fact that they're very compartmentalized and they may have a dark passenger. If you guys listen to that episode, you will hear that.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Dancing happily.
Oh, and they go to the integrator.
Oh, they go into the integrator? Tell me about that.
Integrator means that you're balanced and that you recognize the merit of thinking, and you recognize the merit of emotion and your passion, and all the things that you think are unacceptable because they're emotional are integrated back into your life.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. They're the integrator because they have balanced and reintegrated the things that they're passionate about, the things that they don't think are acceptable, the things that are maybe messy emotionally. They've integrated those back into their life.
Okay, so we've got dancing now, which is divisive, immortal. So divisive makes me think of the word divide, which reminds me so much of the injustice wound because they're very binary.
That's exactly it.
It's right or wrong. But why are they immortal?
Okay, so this is the fascinating thing. The immortal part is related to the splenic center from Human Design, because splenic centers in Human Design, people who have undefined splenic centers are terrified of life. They think that the rug is always going to get pulled out from underneath them. So oftentimes these are people who will, like I know somebody who grew up with a parent who was like this. They were never allowed out. They were never allowed to have any boyfriends. They were never allowed to have any exposure at all to the outside world because they were constantly coddled, and their parents would always draw the blinds at night and be like, there's perverts out there. You should be really scared about this. Like, you should be really scared about the world. Like, that's how this person grew up. Right. And so she grew up with incredibly intense things. So then by the time that she got older, she ended up going into abusive relationships because of the fact that she didn't realize what was actually safe and what wasn't, because she was basically they created a specter of the world as unsafe. And as a result of it, she actually walked directly into an unsafe relationship.
Wait, what does that have to do with immortality?
So the immortality part comes from the fact that, like, it has heavily to do with your fear of death, right? So the worst version of this is somebody who is afraid of change, afraid of any kind of death at all. And so they're constantly trying to make themselves... Oh, because death
and life is very binary to them.
Exactly. So they're trying to make themselves immortal.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. that makes sense.
So Voldemort is the one that we use as the example of this, which is, like, honestly, one of the best ones, because Voldemort created Horcruxes because he was so afraid of death.
Okay.
Right? Whereas Harry basically continually had to die. He almost had to die in every single book of Harry Potter. And by the time that he got to the end, he could face his death. Whereas Voldemort basically had to continually face his death and deny it every single time. Like, both of them are on the device of a mortal arc. Harry became the hero in that, and Voldemort stayed in the villain.
Okay, and so what does the legend?
The legend of this one is the healer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, the next one is number 7.
It's the hungry shapeshifter.
Okay, and that is the father wound. How will we remember this?
So it's a good question, because for a long time I was like, why is this the father wound? Why does this make sense? Because it sits in the throat center in Human Design.
And you're always hungry in your neck? No, just kidding.
It's about attention and about time. So I always think of it as father time, because time is based, this is the universe of time. How you get from being the hungry shapeshifter, in the worst villainous form of the hungry shapeshifter, you're constantly hungry for attention, and you always want to be, you're just like constantly looking for other people to spend their time looking at you, if you want to think about it like that. They go into their legendary form when they become the present. So they become a master of time. So the mnemonic device to remember the hungry shapeshifter is the father wound, is that father time, and time is related to the hungry shapeshifter.
Father, okay. Why is it okay, it's hungry.
It's hungry for attention.
Okay, and the hungry shapeshifter is the one that tries to buy, like, overspend, overbuy, overconsume?
They are. They are the hedonist. Okay, so basically, if you think about the throat center in Human Design, people with the throat center who are undefined in the Human Design always you always talk to get attention.
Okay.
When you're young. And it's like, that's what you're constantly wanting to do, is to get attention. I realized that it related to time when I recognized too how closely attention and time are related. So the shapeshifter part is that they're willing to put on any face in order to be acceptable, in order to gain the attention of everybody. It's the little kid who shows up at the party and who is like, hates it if somebody else gets attention. So they're like, oh, you play the piano? I can play the piano too.
Or you're blowing out a birthday candle? I need a birthday candle.
Exactly. That is the hungry shapeshifter. And so they're constantly shapeshifting to make it so the attention's on them, and they're constantly hungry for that attention and for the time that's associated with attention.
Okay, I won't remember this one. I'm scared I won't remember one. This is the only one that I don't think I will remember.
I always think of it as Loki, but you didn't watch Loki. Because yeah. Loki ended up being a master of time by the end of it. And he's exactly this character. He's the trickster who's always constantly, like, can change his form all the time, right? So it's like...
Yeah.
You don't have the context of Loki to be able to remember it.
Right. We might come back to that one if I can remember a way to think of it. Zebra. Okay.
At the end, let me try to think if I can find a way to remember it.
Yep.
Okay. Zebra. Number 8, righteous bully. So this is, ruining Iceland. This is the R.
Yep.
Righteous bully.
Yep.
And this is the higher father wound that you call it the higher father wound. I like to call this the religion wound.
Yes.
Because to me, I feel like organized religion is very higher father, and then spirituality and like spiritual connection with the earth is higher mother. That's just how I see it. Like, because religion is very structured, very, you know, masculine. And then like dancing around the forest is very feminine to me. So higher mother. That's how I see it. Right. So to me, it makes sense that righteous bully would be religion, or AKA the higher father wound, because I feel like a lot of religions bully their congregants.
That's absolutely
based
true.
On their, you know, religious texts.
So,
not that anything's wrong with the religious texts themselves, but like getting in the wrong hands, those people can be bullies, is what I would like to say.
Yes. So, one of the things that I realized when I was developing this one in particular was that I felt that the righteous bully, especially the sacrificial, the actual image on the card that Megan is painting is like somebody stealing fire, and there's this giant hand, which is like God, who's kind of coming down. And people who have a tendency to think that the world is out to get them sit in the righteous bully, because they think that like God is out to get them, right? So like, or like religion, they're like, I've been sinned and now I'm being punished.
I know someone who always says, when have I finished paying my dues? I'm always paying my dues. I thought that might be vengeful martyr, but that might be righteous bully.
I think it's righteous bully.
Okay. All right, the last one, Iceland, is the invisible destroyer. This is the nothing, right?
Yes, this is the nothing.
And this is the mother wound. This is the higher mother wound. Explain that, or AKA spirituality. What can you explain this one?
Yes, this one fluctuates between destruction and creation. And it sits in the head center in human design, so it's all about receiving pressure from source to be able to do something. And the thing is that the reason why it's called The Nothing is because it harkens back to Michael Ende's book, which I won't get into other than to say, you know, he alluded to, and this is what I found, is that people who are stuck in this, if they don't use their imagination to create something, it will usually tend to destroy them internally through addiction or through bad luck. I know that sounds really weird,
but it's hoarding. Very true. Could it be hoarding? Or no. Hoarding's more of the other one, right?
Hoarding's more like, honestly, getting stuck in creation. If you were going to do anything, you know what I mean? Because you're like, if you got stuck in the architect.
Or could it be hungry shapeshifter? You're hungry for things?
Yes, that's very true. There could be a hoarding aspect of the hungry shapeshifter, especially if it brings you attention and it's like hobbies that you're like wanting to do because you want to say that you can do them. Do you see? It's expression, but you're not actually doing them. You're just like paying lip service to them.
All the hoarders I've seen is not hobbies. The hoarders I've seen are like true hoarders.
Right. Right.
Which is like stacks of cardboard.
Which to me is the nothing, because you're in a place where you're just static. So you're absolutely right. So aspects of the invisible destroyer are addiction, getting stuck in paralysis because you're asking too many questions, getting stuck in your imagination, having bad luck, or being a hoarder because you can't actually destroy. Like, okay. You can't actually get rid of things. You're stuck in stasis. It's like being stuck in a stasis.
Whereas the hungry shapeshifter is hoarding because they want more stuff.
And they want more attention for the stuff. Yep.
Okay. That makes sense. So yeah, same problem, different reasons, right?
Yep.
So now going back to all of them, you made a cool list for me and I want us to share it with our listeners.
Yep.
Of how to remember everything. So starting with number 1, obedient critic.
It believes it can organize its shadow.
Okay.
It believes it can hierarchize its shadow. If it organizes and creates hierarchy around its shadow, then its shadow can't bother it anymore.
Okay.
Right?
All right. If it steps above its shadow,
kind of. Exactly.
If it organizes itself above it.
If it organizes itself above it or even below it, there's the imposter in that one too. So it's like, ultimately, all of these villainous forms are strategies to avoid doing shadow work.
Okay.
Right?
Which I wanted to say in the very beginning of the episode is why your content on villains might be hard for a lot of people to digest, because it's so easy for people to digest being the victim but not the villain, and it's really hard to see yourself as the villain. We're going to get to that later in the episode, but of how we're villains. But yeah, I think that's a really good point. Okay, the vengeful martyr.
The vengeful martyr, it feels that it can do enough work to make up for its shadow.
Okay, so it's like if I, for example, I don't know where this one's coming from. If I cook elaborate, amazing meals for my family almost every night of the week, then it's okay that I blow up during PMS.
Exactly.
Because I have worked for it.
Exactly.
Okay. Vain controller.
It tries to hide its shadow under its success.
Okay. The eternal child.
It thinks it can leave its shadow behind, like Peter. Like, literally, that's how I came up with this entire thing.
I'm getting chills.
Yeah, that's how I figured out the entire thing.
Oh, it totally separates himself from the shadow.
You totally separates himself from the shadow.
I love it. Okay. Evasive expert.
It believes it can outthink its shadow.
Okay. Are rejection people usually very cerebral?
Yes.
Okay. Divisive immortal.
It thinks that it can protect everyone with its shadow. Or from its shadow. Depending on how your strategy is. It wants to protect people from its shadow, right? Like, it wants to protect everybody from the great shadow. And it thinks that, and it's like, I'm going to use my fear of everything to protect everybody. Does that make sense? Its shadow is fear.
Okay, the hungry shapeshifter.
The hungry shapeshifter, it thinks that
I'm going to eat my shadow.
It thinks that it can outshine its shadow. That it can be entertaining enough and get enough attention that no one will notice its bad parts.
Okay. And the righteous bully.
It thinks that it can fix its shadow.
Ooh. And then the invisible destroyer.
It succumbs to its shadow.
I love it. Okay. I hope that this was helpful for everyone else to understand this villain stuff more. And then I thought that the thing we would do next is just talk about, like, tackle the first two villains and talk about our own internal journey with those villains. Does that work?
Yeah, that works.
I'm leaving this episode and it's your content. Like, whoops, sorry.
No, I love it. It's fine.
Okay, should I talk about mine first or you want to talk about yours?
You go first.
So I've taken the quiz. I've done her shadow work. What was it called, that class we took?
It was an inner villain circle.
Okay. I've done the inner villain circle with Christina and her other students. And I've been working on different villains, but the most recent one to come up for me is the obedient critic, which I feel is perfect timing because it's the first one on the list. So we can kind of go in a chronological order. Okay. So mine is the obedient critic. And the reason why I notice this is that, like, every time I get PMS, the things that bother me the most in other people come out. But, like, the rest of the month, I don't even notice. So, it's like, PMS is a secret gift to see, like, what subconsciously I loathe in others. So, well, the thing that came out last month, last cycle, was I started to think that, gosh, how do I put this nicely? I started to think that certain people I spent a lot of time with were really dumb.
Yeah.
I was in some situations where I felt that everybody was dumb and incompetent, and I was competent and smart. And I kind of vented to Christina and our friend Megan about it, and they came up with strategies to help make the other people smarter. And then like, they both were like helping me realize, like, no, this is a good opportunity for villain work, because the truth is, it doesn't matter if they got smarter. The issue is that I'm a villain, right? I'm being an obedient critic. I'm sitting here being like, I'm better than them. I'm holier than them because I'm smart and I'm competent. I know how to get the rental car to start. I know how to get the elevator buttons to turn on in this weird ass elevator. I know how to make a meal out of nothing. Like, I was creating or enjoying all these opportunities for me to be amazing and them to be stupid and incompetent and just enjoying. I mean, on some level, I enjoyed it.
You enjoyed it, yeah.
Yeah, so I was recognizing that I was a villain. So I was like, God, I have this big intelligence thing, like, you know, like, I was always in AEP classes and honors classes and got straight A's and I got a double major and a doctorate. And, like, I've always really prided myself on my ability to be intelligent and then also my ability to, like, be resourceful. So I want to install something in the garage. I figured out. I watch YouTube videos. I figured out. Like my neighbor jokingly and lovingly maybe said that there is no job beneath me because I'm, like, out there laying pine straw, you name it. Like, there's no job below me. And I prided myself in that resourcefulness. And then the question becomes, but why? Like, why have I created a situation where I am so much smarter and more competent than those people around me? Are they really that dumb? Or am I just creating this illusion that I can be more amazing than them, right?
Yep.
So I decided that the best treatment for this problem was for me to be stupid.
multiple times a day. So
I love it.
I decided that every day, three times a day, I had to be stupid or incompetent. So it was little things like, you know, I'm traveling and someone I'm with asks me what zone number we are to board the plane. And I pull out the plane ticket and I pretend not to know where the zone number is on the ticket. I mean, this is something really dumb, but like usually I'd be like, I'm a travel expert and I know exactly where the zone number and where our seats are and when we're getting on and getting off and what fits, you know, in the overhead. And I just stare at the ticket and I'm like, I don't know. And then the person's like, oh, zone 4. So... You know, little things like that. And then, yes. Like, my child had a problem with the door, a doorknob not working. And I came up with the stupidest solution was jiggle it. And normally I come up with 500 different solutions and I'd get up off of the chair and I would go help this child figure it out and yada, yada, yada. And this time I just said, just jiggle it. And I just kept sitting there, not being over competent, not being over smart. And then someone else who usually doesn't try to solve the problems gets up and helps my child fixed the doorknob. And so what I learned was like, A, I was creating latency, which is in behavior therapy, is when someone has learned helplessness or is just doesn't do something because they don't know how to do it. When you provide latency, meaning time, like space, that gives them time to think, gives them time to come up with a solution. Like I was providing latency for others who normally always relied on me to be competent. So I was doing them a favor. And number two, I was doing my ego a huge favor, which is like, I was letting my ego know, like I was making my ego have to deal with the fact that I wasn't the smartest and most competent person in the room. And then it was really, really good for my humiliation wound because there was this one time, like later on, I really did start doing stupid things. So like what later on, I had a milkshake in my car on the dash. And I started the car, even though I could see it, I started the car and it flung all over us. And I just got a new car and like, I don't know if you know this, but rotten milk smells terrible. Christina just dropped her water bottle. Okay. So anyways, the milkshake like sprays all over my brand new car upholstery. And it was just such a dumb thing for me to do. And this is how I knew that this work was working. I didn't have these pangs of shame and I didn't get angry.
Oh, that's amazing.
I didn't laugh either. I just like was like, oh, well. And I was like, okay. And so I went and I cleaned it up and I wasn't angry and I wasn't ashamed because I noticed that usually when I drop things or I make huge messes, I would get angry about these messes. And I realized that the anger was stemming from a humiliation first, but like I didn't immediately feel humiliated to do something so stupid because for the last week, I've been practicing purposefully being stupid. So then when I did a real stupid thing, I didn't shame myself, if that makes any sense.
That makes perfect sense, yeah.
So anyways, I'm teaching some people in my life who I have been like overly helping, overly providing resources to and answers to and all sorts of things. And y'all can probably guess who these people are, but I don't want to talk shit about anyone I love on a podcast. But anyways.
Just yourself.
Just myself. But let me just say that playing stupid is a really good medicine for a beating critic. I'm not saying pretending to be incompetent and stupid is the solution for all of these villains, but I know that if you are dealing with obedient critic, or whatever it is, the thing that you like to think you're hierarchical about, maybe you're the most beautiful. Maybe it's time for you not to wear makeup for a few days. Or, you know, like if you pride yourself on being so good on putting on your makeup and your hierarchy is like, I'm the most beautiful. Maybe try going out without doing your hair and out doing your makeup. Hell, take it the next level and put like red, brown under your eyes and like ashen color on your lips. Like make yourself look worse than you normally think. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Whatever your hierarchy is, maybe the medicine for this wound, for this villain, is to make yourself be the very thing that you think is so humiliating.
Yes. And just know that if ever you're the obedient critic and you're looking at trying to control other people as opposed to yourself, like that's your biggest red flag that you are headed towards the pinnacle villain and not towards the legend, right? Because ultimately every single pinnacle villain has externalized and projected their own villainy onto another person and is reacting to it accordingly.
Okay, so case in point, I was thinking about it. And the villains, if you think about a Rubik's Cube, like what, there's how many sides to a Rubik's Cube? 8?
No, 6.
Wait.
6.
Okay.
There's 6 sides to a cube Rubik's Cube.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so you have six sides of a Rubik's Cube. So imagine that the villain, let's say Rubik's Cube with nine sides, let's say, and like you shake it all up and all the little blocks are on different sides, and like you kind of see the world based on what colors are on that side that is facing the world, right? But you can shuffle them. Like, we all have these villains, but we can just shuffle them and get different color combinations with which to see the world. So it's like no one's better or worse than anyone else. It's just kind of like we're just showing the world different sides of the villain. And then your greatest indicator that you have a villain is you, in you, is when you are seeing faults in others. Like, here I am thinking, gosh, these people are incompetent. Gosh, these people don't know what they're doing. That is my wake-up call that, like, I've got a villain. Because let me tell you what, legends don't sit around and talk shit and complain about other people.
It's true.
Okay.
It's true.
Tell me about yours.
So the Vengeful Martyr. This was interesting for me because I always, whenever we talk on the podcast, you're always the Vengeful Martyr.
Yes.
You're the abandonment wound. And so I was like, okay, let me like look at this in myself. And I can most relate to the experience of being the Vengeful Martyr. Because when I run out of energy, that's when I become vengeful, right? Like, that's when I become...
Scarcity.
It's like that scarcity of like, oh my God, I don't have enough energy. And then all of a sudden, I use that as a justification at the end of every day to be like, just go away. I can't handle you. I'm overstimulated. I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, you know, like all these different things. Like, I've been talking to people all day. I can't talk to you guys right now. I need to like be in my own space, right? So it's like... To me, we talked about how one of the subtypes of the Vengeful Martyr is the apologetic. That is where I get stuck a lot because I'm just like, I'm tired. I really probably do need to unwind, but I'm not because I feel guilty about being gone all day. But then when I come back, I'm not actually fully restored and I'm not in a space where I can actually do it. So I just make excuses to my family as to why I can't be there, despite the fact that I probably should have just fucking stayed in my room, meditated for half an hour, and then come back in restored.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that's ultimately a very vengeful martyr sort of thing to do, is to make your presence there, even if you can't actually be. It's like the person who it's like, oh, you're going to go take a nap? Oh, go take a nap. And then you're like, oh, I couldn't sleep, so I'm going to come out here and still be in a bad mood just because I feel guilty about going to take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, if you spend the half an hour to do something for yourself, then all of a sudden you're going to be fully restored and actually be able to show up for other people and be able to like restore your energy so you can show up to other people. So that's how mine shows up with the Vengeful Martyr a lot. And it's one of the things that I struggle with a lot. Like, I'm in Atlanta this weekend. And my husband isn't feeling well. So I smush everything into this very short time period because I don't want to be away from my kids. But then by the time I get home, I won't even be able to be with them.
Right.
Whereas if I had made the trip twice as long and just taken my time, then all of a sudden I would actually like have regenerated and like restored myself so I could go back.
And the irony is they don't really care, you know.
They don't really care, exactly.
Like, what was one of the things that I've been learning with this whole obedient critic is like, with my kids, they ask me questions and I always try to give them a really good answer. And if I don't know the answer, I go research the answer and provide them with the answer. And it's about the stupidest shit in the world. And I thought about it. I'm like, kids whose parents abuse them or are drug addicts or negligent or whatever, those kids love their parents just as much as my kids love me. Like, your ability to love is not contingent upon what your parent does or doesn't do, right?
Right.
And so it's like, here I am trying to earn my children's appreciation and love by being so resourceful and knowledgeable. But really, like, my kids love me anyways. Like, your kids, whether you're tired or you're not tired, your kids love you anyways.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting with you being a projector too, just to kind of add a level of nuance into this, is that like, every single time your kids ask you a question, they're inviting you into their energy fields. And so
maybe that's why I get hooked.
And so you're getting hooked because you're getting energy from them and you're going to provide them with guidance. But your job, and your job has always been, to be more discerning about what invitations you take.
Yeah, I don't need to know what year the Great Wall of China was built.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Right?
Now I'm going to go look it up. Just kidding.
But I think I think it brings up a really interesting point is that like, that's one of the things that I started to recognize with the villains and kind of moving out of them. So one of the things that I recognize is that, the actual gameplay of the cards themselves. We've been working out the gameplay, and one of the things that I found is that there's a bunch of different ways to do this. You can go directly into the hero, which is kind of doing the opposite of the villain. So,
oh, that's what I was doing, right?
Yeah. So like somebody who's a vengeful martyr, if you learn how to be selfish, so to speak, like have boundaries, like have an understanding of your own boundaries, then that's a really good way to get out of this villain. Another way that we're doing in the gameplay is that you go into the villain and you try and really understand what it's like to be in a scarcity mindset, which is the vengeful martyr. They're in a scarcity mindset, right? Like to really understand what it is to be in a scarcity mindset and recognize that a scarcity mindset breeds another scarcity mindset. Like it's a self-perpetuating system. Like it's very hard to find abundance from a foundation of scarcity. And so that's one of the things that I've been doing with it is just recognizing that like, hey, I'm going to make like this trip. I was supposed to drive in tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. and then get back to my house at midnight.
That would have been insane. That would have worn you out.
Yeah, exactly.
Why were you going to do that?
Exactly. Because that's what I want to do because I feel guilty about not being present for my kids. And so then I decided I was like, oh, I'm going to go to Anna's house and we're going to record this episode. And then I'll at least have one night in. And then all of a sudden I started to realize that like, I shouldn't get home at midnight. I don't have anything scheduled on Thursday morning. I'm going to have a nice breakfast with a client on Thursday morning, and then I'm going to go home. And that's what I'm doing now.
Right. So you made your plans as if you had an abundance of time.
Exactly. With the understanding and hope that by the time I get back, I'll be in that abundance mindset.
Yes. And also you won't be worn out from being so scarcity mindset and like rushing and all that.
Exactly. Well, okay.
You're working at from an abundant point of view.
Well, so what I was basically what I had to do to be able to understand that about abundance is I had to go into scarcity.
Okay,
that's what I'm trying to say. Like it's so like which,
so. If you were going to prescribe your medicine to me as obedient critic, as an obedient, what would that look like?
So what that would look like is you're like, okay, what do I out of all of these, what do I most relate to? I most relate to the perfectionist. So now my job is to figure out what it feels like to be like, get in touch with being a perfectionist, right? Like,
right.
To feel that way.
I was aware of that.
And then go into your pinnacle villain form, which basically means I'm going to go into the most critical and hierarchical place that I can. And I'm going to put myself above people, below people. And I'm going to just like, I'm going to figure out all my hierarchies, right? Like I'm going to hierarchy the shit out of my life. Right. And what it does is it makes you so aware of the system that suddenly all of it means nothing. You're just like, this means nothing. It's nonsense, right? You've basically convinced yourself that it's like, there's no reason to have this. And therefore I'm going to become the anarchist and I'm going to get rid of all the hierarchy. Because if I think I'm more emotionally intelligent than this person, you know, but I'm judging them with something that doesn't make any sense, or I feel like I'm smarter than this person, but actually this person doesn't lose their shit in meetings and doesn't like lose their temper on a regular basis. All of my judgment of them is bullshit. Therefore, I need to tear down all of my hierarchy.
Right. Okay.
Right. It's like an awareness step. By going into the pinnacle villain, you don't pull any punches with yourself. You're just like totally raw and honest with what you're doing.
So you know what I love about that?
What?
Is that in physical therapy, there's direct and indirect techniques.
Okay.
And this is totally showing that. Okay, so let's say, for example, you have an elevated second rib.
Uh-huh.
So there's two different treatments for that. A, depress the rib, which is direct.
Right.
And B, indirect means I lift the rib even higher.
Yes.
I elevate your rib even higher than it should ever go. And then I let go and your body will put it back into the right
that
position.
That is exactly it. That's the
two different treatments.
Those are the two different treatments.
Direct and indirect.
We're direct and indirect. That's exactly it. Right? The hero is direct. The hero says, I'm going to directly act to behave in a way that is counter.
What was I doing? I was doing direct.
You were doing direct and I was doing indirect.
Okay, so if I wanted to do indirect as obedient critic, I would have to put myself as the most amazing, amazing, competent of all and be above everyone and then realize that it's such a bullshit situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that would put me back down to neutral.
Yeah, that would put you back down to, that would self-correct back into the Equalizer, Equalizer, right? Which is the legend.
And then for you to do that with the Vengeful Martyr, you did it indirect. So let's do direct. What would direct
look like? My direct would be to put up very clear boundaries. Even if I didn't know exactly how to put them up, I would
or
just
say
be
no
like,
to everything.
Just say no to everything, right? Like I'm going to be totally selfish right now. I don't want to go anywhere.
I have to say no to three things every day.
Exactly. That would be direct. That would be the direct way of dealing with the Vengeful Martyr is that you're like, boundaries. I'm supposed to be selfish and have boundaries. So I'm going to arbitrarily put boundaries on this thing as opposed to recognizing and going into the idea of scarcity and actually trying to create something from that.
So next time we get back together, Christina, I want us to record again some summaries going a little more in depth with these villains.
Yep.
I want us to tackle the third and fourth villain. So I'll be the Vain Controller, you're saying?
Yes, you do the Vain Controller, I'll do the Eternal Child.
Okay, I think that fits because I had a dream about the Mean Girls, Rachel McAdams, and I feel like the dream was showing me the ways in which I'm a Vain Controller, which is aka the Mean Girl.
And I literally had a dream last night that finally resolved my Eternal Child.
Okay, so my homework then, our homework, you and I's homework, and any listener who wants to follow along, our homework is to examine the ways this villain shows up in our lives, either the Vain Controller or the Internal Child.
Yep.
Okay, until next time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Spiritual Fix. If you are interested in finding out what your primary inner villain is, you can go to www.christinawiltse.com to take the test that is linked. That's KristinaWiltse.com. Thanks, y'all. And remember,
humility, gratitude, acceptance, done.
Hi y'all, Christina from TSF here, The Spiritual Fix. I wanted to invite you to my Substack, where we are about to start a series on the inner villains, the parts of us that sabotage, control, or quietly hide when things get hard. These upcoming posts will walk you through how to recognize them, work with them, and eventually transform them. They're going to be a wonderful complement to what we're hearing here on TSF. And if you are a paid subscriber, you'll also get a new meditation each month to support that integration. You can find it all at ChristinaWiltse.substack.com or search The Life Alchemist. Thanks, y'all.